The following is a paid presentation. The views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WIFE or Whitewater Broadcasting. It's time for To Your Health, brought to you by Rush Memorial Hospital. A weekly visit with the healthcare professionals at Rush Memorial to introduce you to the employees and the various programs at the hospital. And now, your host, Mary Frances Friedel.
Good morning. We're here today with Dr. Sabashark Sarin, who is a pain management specialist at Rush Memorial Hospital. He is here to talk to us about back pain and treatments for back pain, and specifically back pain resulting from osteoarthritis. Good morning, Dr. Shark Sarin.
Good morning, Mary Frances. Thank you for having me here. I appreciate the audience listening to this show.
Thank you so much for coming. I hear you have some good news. You've just gotten your second board certification, have you not?
Yes. So I thank you so much for that. As you know, the COVID has changed the timing of the testings for almost all specialties, but I was able to be one of the first groups that go through the new certification with American Board of Anesthesia for pain management and anesthesia specialization certification. So,
well, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I'm glad I didn't have to study for that test. I do not envy you.
Well, the being a physician almost means that you got to study forever. So it's always keeping update with the new science and new technologies that come out and trying to provide the best patient care possible.
You're here to talk to us about back pain. And I believe that when we were discussing this ahead of time, you said that it starts in the joints that are in the spinal column. And I think some people may not understand exactly what a joint is.
You know, as you know, our skeletal system consists of many bones. That's what brings our structure and holds up ground, right? So a joint is a place where two bones are coming together and there is movement. There are many types of different joints based on their function and degree of mobility. One of these joints is called synovial joints, but basically there is cartilage, there is fluid, there are two bones, there's that cushioning, and there's a capsule around. So facet joints are part of these synovial joints.
So the facet joints, are these the joints that are in the back, in the spinal column?
Yes. So a facet joint is a joint that connects two vertebrae together in the spinal column. So the vertebrae are the bones that consist each segment of our vertebral column. And these facet joints are on the right and left side of the vertebral column, connecting each segment together. They give you the mobility, the ability to bend, to twist when you are trying to make a movement that involves your spinal column.
And then kind of sandwiched in between these bones is a layer of cartilage, right?
Between the bones, yes, that's true. And between the vertebrae, there is the discs that are cushioning between the vertebra.
Okay, so then what is it? What happens when arthritis occurs in these joints?
Over time, the process of wear and tears happen. Or acutely, there could be some inflammation where the cartilage has some damage. Or again, over time, the wear and tear, the cartilage becomes thinner and thinner, and then the bone can overgrow and cause pain with movement. So instead of having cushioning between these bones, or instead of having a smooth surface for the bone, a smooth surface on the articulating bones, we don't have that kind of smooth movements, and people can experience pain.
Well, it sounds painful.
That is true for those who have it.
So how do people know that they have this? I mean, obviously pain in their back, but I'm assuming there's lots of different types of back pain. So how would you know that you had this type of pain?
So facet joint inflammation or arthritis can happen either acutely, meaning off sudden, or more commonly as a gradual process, so over time. In both cases, patients usually present with actual back pain, whether it's neck pain, mid back pain, or low back pain, that is very much confined to the vertebral segment the pain is coming from. Now, there are certain radiation pattern of the pain that is, I think, kind of outside the scope of this talk, but typically the patients complain of back pain. That's the typical complaint. The pain is worse with bending, twisting, or prolonged standing. As we talked just earlier, these joints are responsible for the motion in the vertebral column. So you can imagine that any type of movement that involves motion at the level of arthritis in the vertebra will trigger the pain. This pain can happen in both younger patients because of trauma and rarely early arthritic process, or in the more common category of patients, the elderly patients who have risk for arthritis of these joints over time.
Okay, so when this occurs in people who are older, is this because of something that has happened to them when they were younger or something that they've done when they were younger?
I think a better way of answering this question is talking about who is at risk for the facet arthritis pain or just facet joint pain. I think the degenerative process can eventually happen in all of us as we all have wear and tear over time for these joints. We all move these joints unless you just keep it in a box and not move it. This will happen eventually. Of course, there are a certain group of people who can speed this process and have earlier presentations.
So the people who get this when they're older, do they get this because of something that happened to them when they were younger or something that they did when they were younger?
I think that a better way of answering this question is to ask who is at risk for this kind of pain or degeneration. So degenerative spine processes can eventually happen to all of us. We all have tear and wear over time as we age. Of course, there are certain group of people who can speed this process and have earlier manifestation or presentation of the pain. This would be people who put these joints under a stress by not maintaining good hygiene for lifting or exercising. Of course, factors such as trauma, poor posture, obesity, smoking, or genetics may play a role. So I think the area that we practice includes a lot of farmers. We have a lot of factory workers and athletic younger, older individuals who can have these processes going on.
So what are some ways in which this can be prevented?
I think workers or our athletes needs to learn how to perform those maneuvers or exercises or lift in the right or correct fashion so they don't hurt themselves. Again, we want to minimize the process of wear and tear and trauma to these joints so we can enhance or prolong the lifetime of the cartilage and prevent inflammation in the joints. Remember, any trauma or any inflammation is similar to planting a seed for arthritis later on in life. That said, this does not mean that we should not be active. Regular exercise and activity really help prevent these joints from having degeneration. The right way of doing regular exercise or daily exercise is similar to lubricating these joints, because by doing activity, we are enhancing blood flow, the nutrition, and support for these joints.
If a patient thinks that they have this facet joint arthritis, who should they see first?
So typically that involves the timeline or depends on the timeline of having these facet pains. A patient have or can have pain either off sudden or gradual, as we discussed. But depending on that timeline and whether or not the over-the-counter medications or home therapy works for them, they can start seeing a primary care doctor as their first stop. Primary care doctors can initiate the conservative management depending on how the patients are presenting and the degree of the pain, and that could involve initiating some medication and physical therapy. For a subcategory of these patients with severe pain or persistent pain over 3 to 6 months, I think a pain management referral is definitely appropriate. And once they come to our offices, then the workup typically involves listening to patient history, taking a really detailed physical examination, and then further working up the patient with imaging such as X-ray or MRI. At that point, if the conservative management that includes medication and physical therapy is exhausted, we make decisions to proceed interventionally to bring relief for patients.
And what are some of these interventions that you use?
So we can proceed with cortisone injections or ablations, else we can talk about it in detail.
I have heard a lot about cortisone injections, and I was wondering, can people just continue, if cortisone injections help them with their pain, can they just continue on cortisone injections indefinitely, or is there like an end point at which you have to change over to a different type of treatment?
I will get to this answer, Mary Frances, but let me talk about how long a patient should wait before they seek treatment. I think a pain over a couple of weeks would need a primary care doctor evaluation if it's persisting or not going away. Of course, again, it depends on the severity of the pain, but a pain over 3 months is definitely chronic in nature. That's the definition of chronic pain. And then most patients first use over-the-counter, as we talked about, medications, and that include Tylenol or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications such as ibuprofen and naproxen. But I want to give that warning to patients that they have, although they are over-the-counter medications, there are groups of patients who should not take either subcategory of these medications. So they have to be very careful about using these medications, especially our elder group of patients. Other types of medication can be prescribed by the primary care provider or the pain management provider. These include a variety of classes of medication. Unfortunately, with new advancements and the technology these days, we have a variety of regimens in our toolbox to offer to our patients.
Are these opioid or non-opioid?
For these type of pain, we are mostly talking about a non-opioid regimen. Engaging with physical therapy is very, very important. I want to put a lot of emphasis that there is a strong evidence behind how these exercises or therapy sessions can change the outcome of pain management in long term. And patients need to be compliant with those sessions. And after they graduate from these sessions, they usually have a home exercise program. So it's very, very important for patients to look at these sessions and the home exercise program just like a medication regimen.
Is that sort of like lubricating the joints like you talked about earlier when you were referring to it's important to have physical activity to prevent it? So then I guess after you get it, then you need to have physical activity again to help.
Absolutely. So these activities, again, help to enhance that blood flow, decrease the amount of inflammation, and bring that support back to these joints. For example, if you're not maintaining the right posture and that's why a joint is under stress, then correcting that posture really helps us to take off that trigger off these joints.
Well, you certainly made me want to stand up straight.
That's very correct. I remember almost all mothers correcting their little daughters for posture, and I think that's kind of what we need to do for our population in general, regardless of our gender, to keep or prevent these kind of arthritis from happening early. The other thing, sometimes the imaging shows instability at the level of these joints. If the joints are not being maintained well, then we can have a slippage of vertebra over the other that can be very dangerous. So that evaluation by the primary care doctor or pain provider or a spine specialist is very important, because if there is a degree of instability, then we'll talk about surgical options to fixate these joints. Back to your questions about cortisone shots. These shots usually are performed under X-ray and can be repeated every 3 to 6 months. Cortisone or steroids typically help bringing down the level of inflammation, and that can lower the amount of pain that you have. Unfortunately, the reduced inflammation doesn't last forever, so that's why we need to repeat these shots. I think a typical timeline for repetition, as we talked, is 3 to 6 months. If the efficacy of these shots decrease, then we'll need to talk about other interventional aspects such as ablation.
So do you mean when the shots no longer give that pain relief?
For that period of time, that's correct. So if I give a cortisone shot and a patient comes back to me and say, I only had a week of relief, then this would not be a sustainable kind of procedure to be performed every single week. The other point is steroids have side effects as well, especially in our diabetic patients. It can cause increased blood sugar. And so we have to be very careful about the amount of steroids that we give yearly to patients, because most patients have a variety of different arthritis in their body as they get older. So they receive injections in their knees, shoulders, back. So we have to include the total amount of steroids that we give per year to the patient.
Okay, so there's a limit to how much cortisone a person can be given in a year. Okay.
Absolutely.
We have so much more to talk about on this topic, Dr. Sharksarian. Would you mind coming back and continuing to talk about this on another show?
Absolutely. That would be a pleasure to do so again, Mary Frances.
You can listen to past shows of To Your Health. Log on to RushMemorial.com and click on podcasts. Join us again next week for another visit with Rush Memorial Hospital. It's To Your Health, brought to you by Rush Memorial Hospital on Hometown Country 94.3 WIFE. The proceeding was a paid presentation. The views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WIFE or Whitewater Broadcasting.